Ireland is doing more than beer and whiskey, right? Meanwhile, back in the U.S., could it be the death of the teaching profession? Matt's mom, trending news, and more. Let's bust some pencils.
This is Busted Pencils Radio, fully leaded education talk with Dr. Tim Slecker. Here's what's trending in education news.
The teachers our children deserve. Let's be very clear. Number one, there is no teacher shortage. Number two, there is a teacher exodus. And number three, loosening, tinkering, and doing away with teacher licenses will do nothing for the shortage. It will kill the profession of teaching and dramatically increase systemic inequity. Yeah, it's happening all across the country. Policymakers, pundits, and idiots keep screaming teacher shortage, and in the same breath, advocating and putting forth policies that do away with teacher licensing. Why? Well, first, the BS answer. Allowing license flexibility or doing away with teaching licenses altogether will fix the shortage. And hey, you know, if we don't do something fast, children will face empty classrooms. The truth? Softening teacher license policies or doing away with the license altogether will kill the profession of teaching. It's that simple. Yet trying to get media and policymakers to understand this seems almost impossible. Trust me, I've been trying for 4 months. But I have an idea. Instead of simply just bitching about what's wrong, I'm going to do something novel today. I'm going to put forward a solution. A solution in the form of model legislation that can be used across the country. Yes, I'm going to do an ALEC on ALEC. Here it is. Ready? Let me introduce House Bill 2675. I'm joking, of course. Look, if we can learn anything from education reformers and policymaking, it's claiming the moral high ground right from the start by giving legislation a title and not a stupid and meaningless number. That's what matters. Remember Goals 2000? No Child Left Behind? Race to the Top. All ridiculous. But if you dared come out against any of them, you look like an idiot. Remember? Hey, dude, you mean to tell me you want to leave kids behind? Or you got something against kids getting to the top? Hey, time to switch it up. Today, I propose the Teachers Our Children Deserve Act. Simple. All of our children deserve a fully qualified, licensed teacher that has gone through an awesome education program designed to awaken the passion to teach. And if there happens to be a shortage, then this legislation will provide the funding to school districts and teacher education programs that form a mutual partnership that uses a model for teacher recruitment called Grow Your Own. Well, what's Grow Your Own? It's simple. Take our brightest and best teachers. They're already in our communities. Actively recruit them. Bring them into teacher education school district partnerships. Fully fund it. It's that simple. The so-called shortage will die as our children finally get the teachers they deserve. Now, it's up to you. Take this message. Call your legislators. Call your local media. Chain yourself to a tree naked. Well, you might want to do that and check the weather. But you must do something. It's that serious. Don't allow ALEC-sponsored legislation, teacher license decimation, to create even more inequity that will harm our most vulnerable children. No. Demand the teachers our children deserve.
Unfiltered, comprehensive, and of course, controversial. This is Busted Pencils Radio.
He has taught in a range of contexts, from small schools in Ireland to large multicultural schools in the United Kingdom. He's overseen the development of curriculum and assessment at the primary level in his role as director in the National Council for Curriculum and Assessment. Welcome to the show, all the way from Ireland, Patrick Sullivan.
Thanks, Tim. How are you doing?
So how do we manage on Busted Pencils to find a guy from Ireland?
Well, you must have rummaged around. I'm not too sure. I think you read a couple of articles in our newspapers and gave me a call, you know, so we're just delighted to be on your show.
Well, I was going to say, I think it's a step up that we're finally actually talking to somebody who's got the credentials that you have, and on top of that has the awesome Irish accent to go with it. But
one of the perks.
Hey, so listen, I mean, this really does. This caught my eye. It was in the Irish Times, and this whole concept, you know, it's a school, they're calling it a school shakeup, primary school shakeup to focus on play-led learning. When I look at this, just the translation, though, is that, so for the American context, what this essentially is saying is that around grades 1, 2, and 3 for our traditional elementary schools, in Ireland, you call those your primary grades. You're talking about taking, so kids 10 years of age and younger, and saying to those kids in those grades, we're going to take the early childhood curriculum, in a sense, and move the concepts based in early childhood up through age 10. Is that right?
Yeah, you're not too far from the mark, Tim. I suppose what we have in Ireland at the moment is a very old primary school curriculum. It's one of the oldest in Europe. It's 20 years of age in a couple of years' time. And while it's a fantastic curriculum in many respects, lots of things have moved on since then. So a lot of the research that we're reading in developmental psychology, for instance, is pointing the way for some of the proposals that we have developed. And also we have a fantastic curriculum in our early childhood settings called ASHTER.
And right, ASHTER, you and I were practicing that. I keep saying it's ASHTER. ASHTER.
Yeah, ASHTER. And ASHTER means journey in Irish, in Gaeilge. And so in that curriculum, child-led learning is a real feature of that curriculum. And what we're learning is a fantastic sort of transformational aspects that can have for children of a particular age. And at the moment, we're proposing, we haven't developed anything just yet, but we are proposing that we learn from this these experiences in early childhood and bring those experiences into the primary school classroom. So we're looking at, instead of having a subject-based curriculum, you might have a thematic-based curriculum with child-led learning and child-led play in as being a very strong feature of the curriculum in the early years of primary school. So maybe up to about age 8, 9, 10, as you said.
Okay, so right away, though, I need to stop you because you seem to be misguided in Ireland, because you're off the beaten track, because as the world knows, where America goes is where mostly everybody goes. And what we've said is that the hell with early childhood. We need those kids as young as 2 studying phonics, writing their names. In fact, you know, they need to start getting ready for their careers. This idea that you're going to move early childhood concepts up even further along, aren't you going backwards?
Yeah, we're probably drinking too much Guinness and whiskey over here and probably got things muddled up here a little bit, Tim. But, well, I suppose, I mean, look, that is currently a feature of the Irish education system, that there is that sort of schoolification of early childhood settings where children are being readied for school readiness. When actually what we're trying to get away from is that concept and really engaging children in, I suppose, the more creative, problem-solving, social aspects of those type of domains of learning that will really benefit children in the long run, rather than picking up some of the constrained skills very, very early on, which can be picked up at any time, really. So we see a real benefit of the sort of play-led learning, the social aspect of it, the relationships that they develop with their teachers and with their peers, and sort of that idea of maybe even, you know, taking risks in the classroom for children during their playtime.
Well, I mean, you know, I'll go back. Obviously, I was being sarcastic about that because, again, I actually think it's one of the most fundamental flaws America is making, this idea of taking early childhood and, again, taking away fundamental concepts such as play. Largely, though, too, when I read some of, you know, when I get into the ASHTER curriculum guides that are online, and I would encourage everybody to go to www.ncca.biz, and they can get a look at this, and we'll put a link to this on the website also at bustedpencils.com. But you've got great stuff here, and it's not just an idea. This is based on research, and this is where I want to come after Patrick. How is it that you are able, or maybe you're not yet, or maybe you're having the dialogue still at this level, but here in America, the research is clear, just like you just said, that early childhood learning works. Play is what's best for kids. Let's extend it up. How is it that you're able to get people to believe in research? Because right here in America right now, we don't really care for research.
Yeah, well, I suppose what we really do try to do in Ireland, I suppose a much smaller place than the United States of America, is we really do try to work in partnerships with people. You know, so we would work with a great number of networks of schools. We would work with our trade unions. We would work with teacher representatives. We'd work with many different stakeholders when we're developing these ideas. And then that leads to a certain amount of buy-in from the ground level up, we're hoping. And that then, you know, what you develop from that in collaboration with these people brings a sort of a partnership approach, which generally means that the types of developments that you have come through it gain traction in the system. So I think that's a really strong feature of the way we develop curriculum in Ireland. It's a little bit different in other jurisdictions. Like, for instance, in the UK and particularly in England, there's a lot of political interference, and, you know, nothing appeals more to a politician than to rewrite the curriculum and to actually tell people what our children should be learning. And that can very often be counter to research. I'm not sure exactly what it's like in the States.
So in one way, you have that same problem with a politician deciding that for some reason, you know, the heck with research, the heck with these professionals. I've got a political statement to make. I've got an election to win. I'm going to make some kind of curriculum contribution that it goes in the total opposite way because it's going to make a political statement that's favorable for me. So that does happen in Ireland?
Well, not so much in Ireland, but certainly in our close neighbouring countries, and in particular England and Wales. But in Ireland, I suppose you do come under political pressure. Of course you do. I mean, but our particular agency is a statutory independent agency. So it has that sort of autonomy that we can, you know, delve into the research, understand what the research is saying. But I mean, research doesn't always translate into the best possible policy for schools. So then it's about working with teachers and schools and our other partners in education to ensure that whatever we develop makes meaningful change in classrooms.
Okay. I mean, and I love that idea. So again, dialogue is important. It's great to hear. Yeah, and actually, I have some colleagues in England, particularly, and they're, you know, as you just verified, they're kind of going more the American way and really talking about pushing things down. So it was for me. That's why I, you know, reached out to make this contact with you when I read this in the Irish Times. It was so refreshing to hear somebody at least thinking about it, because this idea that you, through Ayrshire, developed a really wonderful early childhood curriculum, the idea of kind of scaling up from something such that's so good is powerful. And to hear that, and, you know, I'm looking at this, and your Minister of Education, Richard Burton, was quoted as saying, you know, that this is really important because of rapid changes in society in the workplace. What's he talking about?
Yeah, well, I think what he's probably getting at there is that what employers are asking from schools and from our education system is less about, I suppose, your literacy and numeracy standards, and much more about the more higher order thinking skills. You know, you know, you're synthesizing, you're analyzing, you're applying, you're, you know, problem solving, your creativity and imagination, and collaboration skills. And we see, you know, the themes of ASTER and the work that we've done in early childhood as speaking to many of those types of capacities in young people. And so we're hoping to progress those through the primary school. I mean, like, a real feature of the proposals is actually to get rid of subjects in the early years of primary, which is a seismic shift when you think about, you know, organizing knowledge and organizing learning. We have 11 subjects at the moment, and what we're actually proposing is getting rid of those 11 subjects and instead having four themes, the four themes of ASTER.
Right.
So it's they're quite radical, but actually they're gaining a huge amount of support at the moment in our system, and actually seems to be one of the proposals that are, that is certainly gathering momentum and something that we're hoping to bring through to fruition.
So, and I just, we're coming up on the time here, so I just want to hit, make sure the listener sees this. As you said, going from 11 quote subjects, so for traditional, to understand English, math, numeracy, whatever you want to call it, history, yep. those subjects, moving into the themes and from Ashtar, which, as you said, for well-being, identity and belonging, communicating, exploring and thinking, and putting that as kind of the thematic threads in which the curriculum is going to exist. And what I like is this quote, and I think it's Richard Bruton again, but where he puts out that we are now hopefully building on a strength and giving people more flexibility and the capacity to be innovative with the curriculum. That excites me, because here in America, the idea of having an innovative curriculum, especially over the last 20 years, has been crushed.
Yeah, and I think, a lot of the reforms internationally tend to work from a deficit model rather than a strength-based model. And what we have tried to do is draw on the strengths in the Irish system. So we have fantastic teachers who are very highly educated, who are really passionate and committed to the profession, who actually we feel and have told us that they want the professional autonomy. They want the judgment, professional judgment at local level to make calls on the types of teaching and learning needed for their particular children in their classrooms, which can be very different from different jurisdictions where, more prescriptive methods of curriculum, and maybe teachers don't enjoy or wish to have that sort of responsibility at local level. But in Ireland, I suppose we've been very fortunate in the teaching population that we have, in regards to our highly educated, highly motivated and committed people who enjoy this exercising that sort of judgment at local level. And that's something that we think is a real benefit to the system. It ensures that schools are coming up with local decisions based on their knowledge of their children, and who knows them better than the schools at local level and their parents, to make calls on the types of learning experiences that they have for children in those schools. So I suppose just to let your listeners know as well, Tim, is that we're still at the early days of this. These are proposal stages, but they are proposals that are gaining momentum in our system, and we are hoping to build upon them and continue to develop them in the coming years.
Well, I can say...
check back in.
Yeah, I was going to say, we got to come back in, but I can just say, after what you just talked about, be ready for an influx of applications from Busted Pencils listeners, the teachers. The idea that you just called them professionals who know what's best to do with kids, I think right there, you've just automatically... there are families now picking up and heading to Ireland. We might have had the potato famine in Ireland in the 1800s. We now have an education famine here in America, and people are going to now go back to Ireland. Patrick Sullivan, you are the director of the National Council for Curriculum and Assessment in Ireland. Patrick, thanks so much for busting pencils with us today.
My pleasure, Tim. Thanks very much.
Patrick Sullivan sounds a lot like Matt Damon's mom. No, not the accent. The importance of early childhood development stuff. I wonder what Matt Damon's mom thinks about what Ireland is up to.
Wait, what? You want to know what my mom would say? All right, well, just ask her.
Matt Damon's mom, Nancy Carlson Page. What is the name of Ireland's curriculum?
Well, I've only read it. If children only read words and then they try to pronounce them, of course, it's always wrong. And plus, I don't know. Anyway, it's... I-S-D-R?
It's Irish, and for some of us, I went, well, don't you speak English? But no, this is the Gaelic. It's Ishtir.
Ishtir.
Yeah, Ishtir.
Yes, well, I was going to propose that it was Gaelic, and I don't speak Gaelic.
Okay, so I love this. So we're talking about Patrick Sullivan. He was recommended to me by a journalist from the Irish Times, Carl O'Brien, about an article that showed up a few months ago about Ireland moving forward with pushing early childhood curricular ideas into the primary grades, translated to English in American schools. In other words, taking early childhood curriculum and moving it up to first grade, second grade, and third grade. What does Matt Damon's mom think about that?
I think it's really depressing that you have to go to Ireland to learn about this.
Well, it might not be depressing to go to Ireland to learn about this, but I thought it's pretty damn depressing that, and in fact, I said that to Patrick. I was like, hey, what the heck you think you're doing? Don't you know that we here in America have the lead on education reform? You're going the wrong way. Because we're saying, hey, early childhood, wait a minute. We don't need that stinking early childhood curriculum stuff that you know, that Dr. Nancy Carlson Page talks about. We need these kids reading and ready, man.
Joking aside, we've mm-hmm. seen, and lots of research shows us this, a dramatic change in early childhood education in the United States in the last 15 years. And we've gone from, in kindergartens, for example, we've gone from a really crisis in the kindergartens was the name of one of the reports. We've gone from really a play-based or play-led curriculum that was basically grounded in, you know, experiential learning and active engaged projects and things, you know, sand table, water table, block building, art, literacy areas, you know, lots of imaginative play. All of those math curriculum materials, construction materials, classrooms filled with those kinds of things, to classrooms that have very few materials, often no blocks, sand, water, you know, science, act engaged, you know, growing avocados, seeds, and none of it.
Right.
And now much no birds' nests and. Unfortunately, just a lot of teacher-led instruction in kindergarten, and especially in lower-income schools. That's what the research is showing.
Well, the research is showing that's happening. But what was really interesting to me, and so talking to Patrick Sullivan, who is actually part of, you know, the equivalent of our Department of Education over there in Ireland, is when I said, you know, all joking aside, I said, Patrick, I mean, this idea of taking your Eishtir curriculum, your early childhood curriculum, which is really solid, play-based, motivated, and moving it up into our equivalent first, second, and third grades.
Yes.
I said, where does that come from? And he said, well, Tim, it's in the research.
Yes,
and
he said, research.
And this is the better part. He goes, and most of it's from America.
Yeah, I know.
So well, our actually, own research, we're not following. Help me understand that.
Okay, this has been happening for a long time. We have decades of research in child development, in cognitive development, in brain science that tell us how young children learn. And we call young children those precious little beings who are 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8
mm-hmm.
that go from preschool through third grade. And we know that they don't learn the way older children and adults learn. They learn in a very different way. It's with their bodies, their senses, their movement, their hands, and their active interactions with each other, with teachers, with materials. They don't learn best by sitting still and learning information directly that a teacher is teaching to them. And there's tons of research. There's volumes. In my own home office, I must have more than 100 books on play and play-based learning. It's very depressing to have this much information available to us, and for me personally, to have read a great deal of it and to know it, and to see what's happening in our schools, because our schools are following the dictates of policies that are not based in the very science and research and theory that we have. And so, he's right. Most of it comes from the United States. So other countries like Finland and Ireland, where you see, and the Nordic countries in general, where you see wonderful early childhood education that is rooted in research and theory of the field, people from those countries will comment that a lot of this research and theory comes from the U.S.
So it is depressing, like you said, that we have to go to Ireland to actually see what's doing, you know, doing things right. But, you know, this is the part for me to really bring forward is I think there's a general consensus, hopefully, that we know we're, quote, doing early childhood wrong, at least within the field, and so we can agree. But here they are moving this, and as you just said, they even in the Irish Times article where this was chronicled, they're saying up through the age of 10, moving this forward. And what does this look like is, you know, in one way, it is kind of dismantling or taking down the discipline silos and starting to say that there are project-based learning issues that are much more developmentally appropriate for kids that age, and in fact help them get better with the disciplines later if we don't take the disciplines apart and give it to them earlier.
Yeah. See, a big concern of many of us in the early childhood field is that in the U.S., as people start talking about universal pre-K for three-year-olds and four-year-olds, what's going to happen is all of this standards-driven curriculum that results in a lot of drill-based instruction and teacher-led instruction is going to push down to our littlest kids. And in fact, that is happening because we've seen that transformation in kindergartens. Mm-hmm. So many of us are very worried to see the idea of universal pre-K get talked about in the context of U.S. education policy currently. I will say that there's one hopeful trend that I've seen in education that's happening here in Boston.
Okay.
Is that...
That's kind of like Ireland.
Yeah, that's right. There's a lot of Irish here.
Yeah, I mean, you got Irish people
My
there.
My next-door neighbor is Irish.
Well, that's enough then. At least if Nancy's next-door neighbor is Irish and they're from Boston, then Boston, Ireland is a very good comparison. Let's go with it.
There you go.
Okay.
What we're seeing in Boston, actually, this is the only school district that I'm aware of in the United States where this is happening. And in reading and checking this out with people, I think this is true. It's the only place it's happening because there's a lot of interest from people in what is happening in Boston. But they do have, it's a large, urban, diverse school district. They have a couple hundred elementary schools. They have an early childhood department. They have coaches and a lot of professional development and a lot happening in the early childhood area. But they actually are attempting to have play-based curriculum in their kindergartens. They have kindergartens and have for 10 years had kindergartens for four-year-olds and five-year-olds. But they are now extending that up to first grade and next year to second grade. So the very thing that Patrick Sullivan was describing in Ireland is actually happening in one city. It's not perfect, but it's a whole lot better than what we're seeing as the typical approach nationally.
Maybe, and I'm just thinking of this, maybe it's because the band Dropkick Murphys are from Boston and they're an Irish punk band, and that influence is what's making the connection to the early childhood from Ireland. I don't know. It's just a suggestion.
Just a thought.
You know, and in fact, they're really fun to watch. So we're going to move the curriculum up, though, and what Patrick did say, and he was honest, he said, Tim, this is a discussion, it's at the proposal level, and there is dialogue, and there is some concern in Ireland about the possibility of moving away from, quote, traditional disciplines and collapsing them into thematic approaches. And he said there's a discussion, but he said, and this goes back to what we started talking about very early on in this conversation, he said, the discussion, though, continually refers us back to research as opposed to philosophical policy-based positions.
Mm-hmm.
And that part was interesting because he goes, look, it's not a done deal. You know, it's not for sure. It's not going through. And there are people that are concerned because this is breaking the norm when people are used to. In fact, we hear this all the time. That's not what I did in second grade, as if that's a quality policy statement, But he said it's refreshing to have the discussion and that people are willing to talk. How do we get that back, at least at a minimum in America, where we can at least talk about this stuff?
This is one of the most difficult things, is to even try to understand how is it that education in the U.S. went in the direction it did in the last 15 years, separating itself more and more from what is known about how children learn, especially younger children. And how is it that policies got developed when there weren't any early childhood educators at the table? And the policies emphasized really drill-based instruction that is so harmful for young kids, because young kids need, holistic, whole child, child-centered experiences, and they need a lot of the opportunity to have social and emotional relationships build as part of their learning. And how did we get into a situation where we're creating these alienating school experiences for young kids that do create a lot of behavior problems? Mm-hmm. I'm sure you know the suspension rates for young children have gone way, way up in recent years, and especially kids of color and low-income kids, and it's because they're in the most drill-based classrooms. How did we get here? I don't have any idea. It got way worse under Obama.
Right.
Why did the Democrats go along with all this, and they still do? And why they don't reach for illumination from people from the education field who know the research and the theory that points the direction for how we should be educating children? I wish I understood that.
I got an answer, though. I know what they do is they listen to Busted Pencils, particularly the segment called What Would Matt Damon's Mom Say?
Yeah, wouldn't that be great?
If they all
did. I wish they were interested.
Well, Nancy, you know what? You and I are going to have to take a trip to Ireland.
Oh, that would be fun. It would be great to see these classrooms. My colleague, Diane Levin, who works with me at Defending the Early Years, is a professor at Wheelock, and you might be interested to know that she takes a group of students every year to look at the early childhood education in Ireland.
Well, that's it then. We're going to finish this segment up, and we're going to commit to going to Ireland.
I like it. I'm ready. I'm going to go right online and get my ticket.
All right.
This is Matt Damon on Busted Pencils Radio. Please stop bothering me and just ask my mom already.
Backpack Full of Cash, the new documentary that takes an in-depth look at the privatization of our public schools, debuted in D.C. this week to rave reviews and will be making its way around the country soon. One of the film's creators, Sarah Mondale, joins us now to take on that famous Alfie Cohn question, what are the schools our children deserve?
Like John Dewey said, they're the schools that we want for our own children. We should want those for everybody. So when we were filming Making Backpack Full of Cash, our new documentary, I guess the schools that I saw that I thought were really the schools that all kids deserve were in Union City, New Jersey. And that district, there was a book written about it, by a man named David Kerp, and those schools, they're seen as a possible model for the country because they're well-funded due to some court cases. These are underprivileged children who a high poverty rate in this district and many, many immigrants. They have fantastic schools. You get this feeling of excitement when you walk into those schools. They have universal preschool, very high quality, with kids exploring, and the teachers are very, very well trained. The teachers are obviously happy to be there. Many of them have been there for a long time. The kids seem genuinely excited about learning. Many of them are working on projects and groups and very high-level thinking going on in the high school. It just seemed like a wonderful public school system that could serve as a model. So that's the kind of, I hope people will see the film, they'll see those schools. Those are the kind of schools I think all kids deserve.
Unfiltered, comprehensive, and of course, controversial. This is Busted Pencils Radio.
She's an education activist and parent of a Philadelphia public school student. She was active in the opt-out movement for a number of years and has now shifted her focus to educational technology and the role it is playing in the next wave of privatization. She blogs at wrenchinthegears.com. Welcome to the show, Busted Pencils Activist of the Week, Allison McDowell. Allison, how are you?
Doing very well, Tim. Thanks for inviting me to talk.
You were messing around on Facebook the other night, and I thought you put out a pretty provocative statement. And as people know, I like to grab provocative statements, put them on my Facebook page. Of course, I quote the person who does it. I don't plagiarize because I learned that lesson. And boy, did it set off a storm of people. According to Allison, you wrote, if people don't rise up en masse, they're likely will not not be a teaching profession as we traditionally think of it in 5 to 7 years. What are you talking about?
So the new phase of privatization really involves a shift to having students spend more and more time in educational technology platforms and devices, the push for one-to-one devices in districts, and really removing teachers as a central focus in the classroom and putting them in a position of really monitoring these data dashboards, the data that the kids are generating on the devices. There's something called personalized learning or hybrid blended learning. In some forms, uses a rotational model where kids maybe are spending two-thirds of their time not in connection with the teacher but on devices, and then maybe only a third of the time directly in connection to a teacher. And so it's being sold to folks as like personalized, individualized learning for students, but in many respects it's a way of isolating students from one another and human teachers. So their interaction and their learning is happening through a device.
Device-driven teaching is going to take the place of human teaching, according to Allison McDowell.
I think there will be an emphasis on learning through devices.
So my daughter's iPad that the school graciously gave her, I thought that was a good thing.
So the narrative goes around like digital divide and kids need tech and they need 21st century skills. Of course, all the folks in Silicon Valley who are pushing this like playlist version of education, they send their kids to Waldorf schools that have very limited access to technology. I think what parents need to be aware of is there's a difference in children using technology in ways in close concert with certified teachers that enables them to like create, share ideas, collaborate. It's very different than children using devices to access learning management systems, which are becoming increasingly common. And that's the playlist version of education. Here, let's queue up a couple of videos and worksheets and things. And Johnny, like, here's your playlist for the day, and I'll see you for 15 minutes, you know, at 2:30. They're selling tech as empowering, but really what most one-to-one device districts are getting with their kids is a very prescriptive, structured method of instruction that isn't creative and open-ended.
It's true. In 5 to 7 years, if we're looking at one-to-one, who needs, quote, human teachers for the public? It's interesting, though, because we're supposedly, at least here in Wisconsin, I mean, it's at the proportions are so problematic, we're talking about doing away with all licensing credentials for teachers because our shortage is so bad. And so how does that work in the new world of high-tech teaching?
Well, I mean, I think in many respects, it's a man-made disaster that has been set up to drive people out of the teaching profession, people for whom the current existing conditions of data-driven instruction and high-stakes testing and punitive interventions and turnarounds is unacceptable. So many people have left the profession for those reasons, and they're looking at bringing in non-certified folks who really just have to know how to look at data and curate learning objects, which is what they feed into these learning management systems. You know, there's a perception that in the future, teaching will just be managing process and not anything that is connected to pedagogy or meaningful relationships with students, which is really, it's unnerving and I think something we should be concerned about.
Well, at least one person then doesn't think I'm crazy, or at least maybe we're both crazy, because I've been trying to say this in Wisconsin now, because you just kind of said it, is that the teacher shortage is really actually a manufactured disaster to get rid of more, quote, professional teachers and certified teachers, hence, which is why we're saying we need to do away with licensing, we need to do away with credentialing, because the shortage is so bad. It's not really about the shortage. It's about moving people into the profession that aren't teachers, that don't necessarily have a sense of one-on-one human relationship, pedagogy, deep understandings of culture, deep understandings of social justice, recognizing they're talking about bringing in a new set of trainable people to plug, as you, I like that what you said, curate data and curate learning activities. Is that how you said it?
Yeah, that's how they talk about it.
So they're curators now. They're not
right.
Teachers. So then I guess we'll have a curator shortage. Or actually, there's never going to be a need for a curator shortage because there's really no...
Well, ultimately, then the algorithms will probably step in. And
So algorithms stepping in, taking the place of teachers, and then... Well, wait. Curators stepping in, taking the place of teachers, and then algorithms themselves stepping in and taking the place of curators. Okay, this world you're painting is not... not making the listener of Busted Pencils very happy. Has anybody said, Allison, you're really too extreme?
My perception of the end game, if they're successful in implementing these reforms, which, you know, hopefully we will all rise up and this will not happen, but they ultimately see a future that doesn't have a neighborhood school in the equation at all, and that you just have a learning ecosystem where you go online and kids do learning programs and watch videos and demonstrate competencies and play games and then go out to various other spaces and earn badges and credits and somehow, you know, groomed and optimized to your, you know, particular job pathway that you're going to do. And that's sort of their vision. And I said, you know, there may be one day that they don't turn on the lights at school anymore and we don't have teachers and we don't have schools. And my husband was like, that will never happen. That will never happen. People won't let go of their schools. And I said, well, they may not have a choice. And, you know, it seemed very far off. There are many things that a year ago seemed very much of a stretch. But, you know, within the past year, Erie, Pennsylvania has been entertaining the thought of not having high school anymore for budgetary reasons. And it's not real until it becomes real. And they've pushed that off, but it is still a proposal that is on the table of having kids do cyber school or busing them to a neighboring district, which might work until there's no money for the buses anymore. And then everyone is on a device all the time. And what's happening in Pennsylvania right now is the intermediate units are building public cyber schools as a cost savings measure. So that infrastructure is already well underway. People are just not noticing it yet.
So let's go back to the original quote, and listener at Busted Pencil, please, people, rise up en masse. That's what this show is supposed to do. Hey, and check her out at wrenchinthegears.com. Allison McDowell, Activist of the Week. Allison, serious busting pencils. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Time now for our salute to legendary activist and historian Howard Zinn. Here is your moment of Zinn.
We don't have to engage in grand, heroic actions to participate in the process of change. Small acts, when multiplied by millions of people, can transform the world.
Thanks to Patrick Sullivan all the way from Ireland, Allison McDowell from Philadelphia, of course, Matt's mom, and hey, how about you? Go to iTunes. Write a review, send us an email. We'll send you some Busted Pencil swag. Until next time, keep busting pencils.
Log on to BustedPencils.com for the latest trending news, blogs, past shows, and more. Subscribe to our podcast in iTunes and Google Play. And get daily updates by following us on Facebook and Twitter at Busted Pencils. This is Fully Leaded Education Talk. Busted Pencils Radio.